SMS for Part 91 begins to mature. May brings two aviation conferences in Europe. And it's payback time for South Carolina workers who voted out of the IAM. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, April 26th, 2011. Boeing Executive VP and General Counsel J. Michael Luttig is assuring customers that production of the Dreamliner at the company's South Carolina plant will begin as scheduled in July of this year, despite an effort by the International Association of Machinists and the Obama administration to force a second production line to be relocated to Washington State. The National Labor Relations Board last week shocked the aerospace industry, and industry in general for that matter, by finding that the decision by Boeing to site a second Dreamliner assembly line in South Carolina, a right-to-work state, was unlawful. Luttig replied, quote, "This claim is legally frivolous and represents a radical departure from both NLRB and Supreme Court precedent. Boeing has every right, under both federal law and its collective bargaining agreement, to build additional U.S. production capacity outside the Puget Sound region," unquote. The two Obama appointments to the four-member NLRB were both recess appointments, and the finding in the Boeing case is the latest in a growing chain of aggressive pro-union moves by the administration, including a decision allowing unionization of TSA employees. The IAM has had a contentious recent history with Boeing, striking in four of the last five contract cycles going back to 1995. The union also has a score to settle with the non-union employees of Boeing Charleston in South Carolina. Those workers voted roughly 3-1 to dump the IAM in September of 2009. That was less than 2 years after a vote in favor of IAM representation passed by just 7 votes at what was then Vought Aircraft Industries, before the Boeing acquisition. If you live in a right-to-work state and have ever opted out of the union personally, you may have observed that the unions sometimes respond in ways that might easily be mistaken for reprisal. Well, just imagine the snit fit if the entire workforce votes the union out, as happened in Charleston, and this whole story maybe makes a little more sense. My guest today on the Aero News special feature is Vincent Vernuccio, the Labor Policy Counsel for the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He'll look ahead to where the IAM complaint with the NLRB will be headed. As regulatory agencies promote safety management systems in general aviation, the means to implement and evaluate them are gradually coming online. The FAA has recognized the Air Charter Safety Foundation's industry audit standard as meeting the ICAO's SMS standards for Part 91 operators. In a recently released FAA Information for Operators bulletin, the foundation is listed as a source for validating a company's SMS in order to fulfill the ICAO requirements for general aviation operators. Foundation Chairman Jim Christiansen is pleased, quote, "A connection between the FAA, industry programs, and the ICAO SMS requirements has long been needed," unquote. The foundation continues to add new operators that have successfully completed its audits to its industry audit standard registry. Customers will find the ACSF IAS registered logo identifying participating operators. Augusta Westland says it's developing a range of mobile applications to improve the flexibility and effectiveness of training media within its courses. Multimedia learning content on the iPad is being developed for a number of key customers in 2011, with both controllable courseware and more complex emulations of aircraft systems. Interactive 3D models and graphical emulations created in GL Studio can be deployed on the iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad. The high-fidelity visual display and secure capabilities give developers the ability to rapidly create content without compromise. Augusta Westland will demonstrate the technology at iTech 2011, May 10th through the 12th in Cologne, where representatives from military agencies in Europe meet the industry to discuss key issues facing the global training community and the solutions. EBACE, the European Business Aviation Convention and Exhibition, runs May 17th through the 19th in Geneva, and on the day before it officially opens, the European Business Aviation Association and the U.S. National Business Aviation Association will jointly host a workshop at the Geneva Polexpo Conference Center dedicated to the safety issues facing aircraft operators in Europe. Topics to be covered include preventing runway incursions and excursions, human performance and managing risk, advanced technology cockpits, and the role of safety management systems and other safety-related tools. The annual EBAA Safety of Flight Award Ceremony will also be held during a post-workshop reception, honoring operators who've demonstrated exemplary safety records. For exact times and locations and other details, visit ebaa.org and look on the right side of the page for the headline, EBAA Press Release, European Business Aviation Safety Workshop. The latest European safety requirements for helicopter operators is among topics to be discussed in depth at Helitech 2011, a conference taking place at the Imperial War Museum at Duxford near Cambridge, September 27th through the 29th. The Helitech conference is new for 2011 and will take place the afternoon of the 28th and the morning of the 29th. A session on the environment will look at greener helicopter development for the future and give a perspective on current research and development. There will be a particular focus on engine development, covering the use of new fuels, creating new efficiencies, and lowering costs. The conference will also look at the development of wind farms and how the rotary wing industry can capitalize. The conference will be held in the airspace facility at Duxford and is being sponsored by Bell Helicopter. Find out more on the web at helitechevents.com. Still ahead, does the FAA have a conflict of interest in keeping controllers awake? You can now track your complaint to the TSA. And NASA's looking for a few good partners. You're listening to AeroNews.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single-lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
Piper Jet.
Piper Match.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, April 26th. I'm Paul Plack. In the continuing political scandal involving the FAA and sleeping air traffic controllers, some interesting background comments have come from Bob Poole, the founder and director of transportation studies for the Reason Foundation. I've interviewed Bob for our special feature podcast in the past, and he may have irritated you at times with his support for an air traffic control system patterned after Canada's, funded by user fees, and giving general aviation a seat at the table for decisions affecting the operation of the system. In the case of sleeping controllers, Bob notes that here in the U.S., unlike in other countries, control radar displays are configured to require darkened rooms, aggravating drowsiness. He also notes that while the FAA is always willing to come down hard on outside entities in the cause of safety, it's much more reluctant to confront its own employees and NATCA. In Bob's view, this is another argument for a system in which the rules should be formulated by the FAA as a regulatory body, but air traffic control should be handled by a separate organization administered by stakeholders. You may not agree with everything he says, but it makes for interesting reading. You can find the just-released April edition of Bob's ATC Reform newsletter and subscribe to receive it free if you like at reason.org. Individuals who contact the TSA Contact Center to report suspicious activity will now receive a tracking number as confirmation of their phone call or email, fulfilling a key recommendation of the 9/11 Commission Act of 2007 and promising improved follow-up tools for both TSA and the reporting individual. The tracking number is intended to provide a documentation mechanism. Through the TSA Contact Center, which was established in June of 2002 as a direct line for the traveling public, the agency receives information concerning potential threats to transportation security and responds to comments and questions from the public regarding processes and procedures at airports. NASA says it's seeking partners to help achieve strategic goals for education, including informal education at museums, science centers, and planetariums. The agency says it's committed to sharing the excitement of space-based missions and inspiring students of all ages to pursue studies in science, technology, engineering, and math, the STEM disciplines. Specifically, NASA seeks unfunded partnerships with organizations to engage new or broader audiences on a national scale. The agency will work collaboratively to leverage partners' unique resources. Potential partnership activities are varied. NASA is receptive to a broad range of possibilities, from creative organizations with wide-ranging areas of expertise. All categories of domestic entities, including U.S. federal government agencies, are eligible to respond. Proposals are being accepted now through December 31st. Find an FMI link for more info at the bottom of the text version of this story, dated April 25th, at aero-news.net. And finally today, another member of the Greatest Generation is coming home. The Department of Defense POW Missing Personnel Office announced on Friday that the remains of U.S. Army Air Force's PFC Mervyn E. Sims of Petaluma, California, have been identified and are being returned to his family for burial with full military honors. Sims was just 23 years old when he went missing with four crew members April 24, 1943, on the dangerous over-the-hump resupply route between India and China. The C-87 Liberator Express departed from Yankai, China, and Army officials launched a search when the plane did not arrive at the destination, but no trace was ever found. In 2003, an American citizen in Burma found evidence of the wreck in the mountains 112 miles east of Chibua. The Armed Forces DNA Identification Lab used mitochondrial DNA, which matched that of Sims' sister, in the identification of his remains. In Sacramento yesterday, California Governor Jerry Brown and First Lady Ann Gust Brown issued a statement on behalf of all Californians, praising Sims for his bravery and extending their, quote, deepest condolences to his family at this difficult time, unquote. Flags in California were flown at half-mast yesterday in Sims's honor. There are still about 72,000 of the 400,000 U.S. servicemen killed or missing in action during World War II who have yet to be accounted for. I'm sure these homecomings are bittersweet, but I wonder if it really is a difficult time for the family, as the governor suggests. After seven decades, I'd like to think I'd be happy, proud, maybe reflective, and certainly grateful. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, I'll talk with Vincent Vernuccio, the Labor Policy Counsel for the Competitive Enterprise Institute, about the IAM complaint with Boeing's new South Carolina plant. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.